RestoreYourHealthNow.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris, the long-awaited return visit from Lauren Coleman. Now, Lauren, just to segue very quickly here, you very recently moved your museum?
Yeah, a short brief history of the museum is I started collecting materials and going on expeditions in 1960. Some people who like to use a lot of adjectives have often called me the world's leading living cryptozoologist. Well, one of the most important phrases in there to me is that I'm living. And so that's always been very important to me. I'm still living.
That's a good.
And I decided,
that's a good start.
Yeah. Why don't I start organizing my collection before I'm dead and sharing it with people? Because, you know, documentary film companies and researchers were coming around. So I organized and founded the museum in 2003. I was in the middle of an ongoing 10-year divorce in which I finally bought a house, and I decided, well, I'm going to buy a bigger house on the advice of my accountant to buy a bigger house and do the whole first floor as a museum. So I set up the museum in my home, 4.5 rooms in my home downstairs, and, you know, I'd have unsolved mysteries and weird travels and all kinds of different programs. Deep sea detectives would come and film there. And they were delighted because I had different rooms set up for different, Africa room, a Victorian room, based around different discoveries in cryptozoology. And so they could film without them having to change things. And of course I had many, many props because they were real artifacts from expeditions. Finally, in 2009, I was invited, a friend of mine was opening a bookstore, and in the back of the bookstore was a kind of a very large room. And she said, you have been wanting to have a public presence to this, so why don't you move your museum to the back of my bookstore, put the Bigfoot that I have, which is 8 foot tall, 400 pound Bigfoot replica, up at the front of her store, draw people into her bookstore, and then they would also occasionally come into my museum. We moved in there, and we found out within a year it was too small. I had over 3,000 artifacts squeezed into this 500 square feet, and so it took us a while, but at a two-year mark, we moved a month ago to this space that's over 2,000 square feet. It's just enormous. It's an old fur company showroom. One room and then another attached room with windows all around. It's an old atrium, so unfortunately it's 100 years old, so there's a roof over it now, but it's got a very tall ceiling. And, you know, we have the full-size Bigfoot. We have a full-size coelacanth, which is 5.5 feet long. We have a 14-foot long model of the Colossus squid. We have a model of the megamouth shark. And I have like 150 casts in display case and skulls and Yeti material, hair sample, fecal material, a cat area, a Loch Ness lake monster area, a sea serpent. And that's just in the evidence room. And then in the outer room, it's a popular cultural and art inspired materials out there. Like we have the jackalope, a full-sized, the prop from the movie P.T. Barnum, the Fiji mermaid that's 3.5 feet tall, Laura Linney shirt and hat from the Mothman Prophecies, because I actually consulted to that movie, items of chupacabras, items from Jersey Devil, the Dover Demon, and the foot from the Terror of Turner, which was a case up here in Maine of a creature that was found, and there was a worldwide interest in it. It was sometimes called the Maine Mutant. Anyway, I've got the foot in a little jar, and that gets a lot of attention. So it just was really nice to move into this new space because we really have room to stretch our legs. And when groups of people come through here, they'll they have plenty of room, and it's just you know, today we had everybody from a couple of zoologists from Florida and a man from England who was a zoologist, a school teacher, a midwife, an artist, a potter, you know, construction workers, truck drivers, everybody in the world who's heard about and been reading about cryptozoology, or they just are on vacation and we're now on all of the top list of places to go in Portland, Maine. And so it's just a kind of a mecca for people to come see.
Now, I understand here it's not free. You're charging a modest admission fee.
Oh, modest. Yeah, $5 for kids, $7 for adults. Yeah, mm-hmm. Very modest. And, you know, people can take all the pictures and stay as long as they want. As my docents often tell me, I'm one of the major attractions. Right behind the fact that we do have a restroom, me being one of the exhibits and being here gets a lot of attention, too.
So you find people coming from all over the world to talk to you?
Oh, yeah, all over the world. There was one man who he came all the way from Sydney, Australia, to a business meeting in Boston. He got on a train in Boston, came up to the railroad station here in Portland, walked from the railroad station, which is about a mile and a half, to the museum, went to the museum, took all kinds of pictures, talked to me for a while, walked back to the train station, took the train back to Boston. There's people from, we had a person from Tibet, we've had people from New Zealand, Australia. When we opened downtown in 2009, on opening day, we had 82 people show up. When we reopened, we had a grand reopening a month ago, the day before Halloween, 162 people came here, and really from all over. People drove up from Baltimore, people came from Connecticut, Boston, all over Maine. It was quite exciting, and you know, it's one of those places that people, I remember at the end of October, it was the last couple that had came to the old museum when it was around the corner in the littler space, and they said that they'd just flown in from Madrid, Spain. They heard me on a podcast over in Spain. And they had just got married. They were on their honeymoon in New England. And the first place they wanted to come was to this museum. And,
I love it.
And it was so...
destination for honeymooners.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe you need to work with the travel agencies here and develop a package.
Yeah. Well, what was remarkable, that was couple number 11 in 2 weeks that said they were on honeymoon and had stopped at the museum during their honeymoon.
That's a little scary, Lauren.
Yeah, it was kind of very bizarre. And there was actually one couple that came through about a year ago, and they were fascinated by the fur-bearing trout. Took all kinds of pictures, asked me a lot about it. And then a month after they left, I got this postcard, and they said, "We're still on our 33rd anniversary honeymoon. And we're up in Alaska, and we found a fur-bearing trout, salmon, and here's the postcard for your collection." That was really strange, but it was very much appreciated.
Fur-bearing trout. That's an interesting one. I think that's a new one for me.
We can't say it's anything fishy.
Uh-huh. Yes. Well, it's right in the same category. It's right on the wall next to the jackalope.
Jackalope, yeah, of course.
Yes.
Now, before we go into the next segment, and we have some questions from our listeners, because we basically anticipated your appearance and opened up a thread at the Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. And that is here in looking at this stuff.
And you screened out all the ones from my ex-wives, right?
Well, yeah. Not really. I don't think you know who your ex-wives are. How many ex-wives do you have? I'm afraid to ask.
Just two.
Oh, okay.
Just two.
I have one, but she's basically a decent person, so if she posts a message, we would allow her to have that courtesy, really.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my approach with ex-wives are that they actually are decent face-to-face, but behind your back, they're telling incredible stories about you.
As long as those stories are true, it becomes fun.
But my experience of learning what has been said has not been true.
We have Lauren Coleman of the International Cryptozoology Museum. We're not broadcasting this to any of his ex-wives. You're talking to Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com. Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Gold isn't for you? Ted Anderson, president of Midas Resources, one of the world's premier gold and precious metal investing firms. I get it. You wouldn't buy gold if you believed that the government is doing a great job, that the Fed will stop handing out trillions of dollars like bailout candy, that Social Security would be there for you. That's not what's happening. You might even pass on gold if the stimulus package wouldn't fuel inflation, or that the dollar wouldn't lose value, or that your retirement would be secure. If all looks rosy to you, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify with gold. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked 30% while gold has risen 300%. Right now, savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. You should too. Find out what they know. Call us and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well, free. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
The perfect water for drinking, bathing, and cleaning. Right at your fingertips? Yes, you can now have the most powerful water ionizer on the market for less than half the price of competitors. The Genesis Platinum Water Ionizer from GibsonsHealth.com creates the perfect drinking water of 9.5 pH, automatically cleans every time you use it, and even tells you when to change filters. Other 7-plate water ionizers are priced at $2,000 or even $3,000. But the Genesis Platinum is only $16.95. Get yours today at GibsonsHealth.com. Under Nutritionals, be sure to click on Essential Oils for aromatic liquids extracted from a broad range of flowers, stems, seeds, and bark. And to really balance your body, click on Go Green, the most complete green drink available, necessary for survival. All this and more are found at GibsonsHealth.com. Call 800-388-6844. That's 800-388-6844 or GibsonsHealth.com. Healthful living since 1974.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
We have Lauren Coleman, places the International Cryptozoology Museum. He's dealing with strange creatures that are indigenous to Earth. They're not from outer space, not from another dimension. They're here. Now, briefly before, you were talking about the Loch Ness Monster. Of course, that's one of the classic strange creature stories. So what is a Loch Ness Monster? Is that some remnant of the dinosaur era?
No, unless you're British, it is. I mean, there is a real breakdown in the theories between the British and the Americans. The British really tend to consider the Loch Ness Monster and other related loch and lake creatures from the Northern Hemisphere as plesiosaurs. Plesiosaurs, of course, are these long-necked marine reptiles that people often mistakenly call dinosaurs. They're not dinosaurs. They're just a prehistoric marine reptile. But if you take your arm and you go back and forth like a little S, you can see that that is the way that the neck of a reptile and a fish moves through the water. But if you go up and down, like through the way that these animals are really moving through the water, like a dolphin, like a whale, like a seal jumping in the water, that's the way that these lake monsters and sea serpents are actually moving. And they also, the reports are that they have whiskers, they have eyebrows, they have manes, they have beards on the males. These are all characteristics, what the Americans keep pointing out, characteristics of mammals. Mammals don't need, you know, a landlocked lake 10,000 years old to survive. They just probably communicate back and forth between the ocean and Loch Ness, for instance. Loch Ness is only 6 miles from the ocean. And actually, one of the hidden secrets about Loch Ness is there's 40 good land sightings of these creatures crossing the road, coming up on the shore, doing things that you would expect from a sea elephant, a walrus, a giant, a seal. Many of these kind of creatures really are considered as part of the theories of most American cryptozoologists. We tend to think that they're mammals, they're warm-blooded, you know, they're able to survive in these large, cold northern lakes. If they were marine reptiles, they would have had to be around for 65 million years. They would have to have a warm-bloodedness, which is not a certainty with the plesiosaurs. And they would have to move in a different way, and they would have had fur on their scales instead of what we think is just a kind of more like a snake or lizard skin. A real difference there between Americans and the British.
Do you think there's some sort of relationship, commonality between, let's say, you know, Nessie, the Loch Ness Monster, and then other lake creatures like Champy and the one up in Canada? I forget the name that they've ascribed to
Pogo
it.
Pogo. Pogo and Caddy and all of those. Ivan Sanderson looked at the lake monster reports, and I mentioned this in my field guide to Bigfoot. If you take a globe of the world and you put your fingers on the top, actually the kind of the lower part of Canada and the northern part of the United States, and you take those your fingers or a ruler or some kind of instrument and go right around the world, all of the lakes in the northern hemisphere are in a small band. And Ivan Sanderson called these the monster latitudes. All of the lakes in those areas and around the world are usually in boreal forests. So northern Russia, Siberia, Scandinavia, Scotland, Ireland, right around the world into Asia, into North America, you have these lakes, deep water lakes. You know there's enough water in Loch Ness to cover everyone on Earth under 6 feet of water. It is that massive a lake. 1,000 feet deep, 23 feet long, and it has that much water in it. I mean, it's just amazing. People don't realize how much water these lakes have in. Anyway, if you look at all those lakes right around the northern tier of the world, they have similarities. They have similarities in the habitat, in the temperature, in the depths. And then if you look at the creature reports, they all tend to move like dolphins through the water or seals, up and down, up and down. And that's why you get this kind of mythical notion that these animals have coils. It's not so much that they have coils, but they're moving through the water in that way so that the artist, you know, artistic motif really started drawing sea serpents and lake monsters that way as if they had these coils. And it's not so much the coils, but it's the way they move. And so, yes, I think there's a lot of commonality. I'm not sure, you know, obviously, that's a large area around the world, so there could be different species, there could be different subspecies, but in general, my whole, one of the theories that I've been very attached to over the years is that you have a giant seal with a long neck, and that the males look a little bit different than the females. So the males have much more hair on their body, much more whiskering and mane and different things like that. The females look, similar shapes, but a more streamlined and smaller body, so that some people think that they're two different kinds of animals, and I think it's just sexual dimorphism.
Interesting.
So I do think that the water horses is better than lake monsters or sea serpents. I think we're talking about water horses all over the world, and it's a nice name because, it's kind of like sea lions and
kelpies.
Kelpies, yes, kelpies. Except kelpies has a real, connection to Scotland, Ireland. So water horses, if we're going to speak in English, it can be used around the world in a nice way. So have you guys been to Scotland?
Well, I haven't. My son has.
I haven't made it up far north. I've been to Ireland, but not to central England, but I haven't made it up north of there.
Well, I did a two-week expedition in 1999 and gave the first keynote at the first International Cryptozoology Symposium at Loch Ness in 99 in July. And it was just a great experience. I mean, to go to a place that had two Loch Ness Monster Museums within one block of each other, certainly in 99 inspired me to really get it together to have my museum become a reality, because Loch Ness really, for me, was the epicenter of cryptozoology. I think a lot of very open-minded people, and certainly they understand echo, or what I now call cryptotourism, that in all of these spots around the world, there are different sightings, different kinds of creatures, and if you're going to you're going to be there and understand that tourists are going to come there and ask you questions, you might as well be prepared with your souvenirs and your, Loch Ness plates or tea towels or whatever it is, because Loch Ness has certainly made money. You know, Roswell made money. Mothman in Point Pleasant is certainly trying to keep some of these dying little communities alive with crypto tourism, so there's no reason that other people around the world shouldn't do that.
We have Lauren Coleman with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Has the United States been discovered in the Bible?
Where does Islam fit in Bible prophecy?
Is the new world order world government?
These and other crucial end time questions are answered in the new DVD package, Understanding the End Time, from End Time Ministries. Jesus Christ said, "I tell you these things before they come to pass, so that when they do come to pass, you might believe." After you watch this 14-lesson DVD series, Understanding the End Time, you'll know more about Bible prophecy than the average seminary graduate. This DVD package normally sells for $280, but now is only $199. Order Understanding the End Time DVD package at endtime.com today for only $1.99 or call 1-800-END-TIME. That's 1-800-363-8463. 1-800-363-8463 or endtime.com.
Introducing a diabetes breakthrough, an easy, natural, organic way to bring relief to diabetics. Introducing MDS Forte, a concentrated super strength extract formulated for those who are looking for relief. What can MDS Forte do for you? MDS Forte reduces glucose levels safely and effectively, reduces cholesterol and triglyceride levels, increases HDL or good cholesterol while reducing LDL or bad cholesterol. MDS Forte reduces A1C, improves eyesight and circulation to the limbs, and helps with weight loss. Is non-toxic, caffeine-free, 100% natural, 100% organic, and comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Waiting for the side effects disclaimers? With MDS Forte, there are none. Order a 25-day treatment of MDS Forte by calling 213-405-5355, 213-405-5355, or visit bestbloodsupport.com. That's bestbloodsupport.com for MDS Forte, a diabetes breakthrough.
Smokers, are you still smoking traditional cigarettes? Are you still smelling up your clothes and car interior, staining your teeth, and getting ashes everywhere? Why, when you could be smoking or vaping with e-cigarettes by LeSig. With LeSig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replacement cartridges, you'll get all the satisfaction of smoking, but no smoking hazards. Choose from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquid flavors at LeSig.com, spelled L-E-C-I-G.com, or call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. LeSig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker. Warning: e-cigs may contain nicotine, an addictive substance known to the state of California to cause birth defects or cancer. Please be aware of the risks associated with e-cigs prior to use. You must be 18 years or older to purchase.
This is Kurt Seven, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
With Lauren Coleman, with Gene and Chris on the Paracast, we're exploring the tourist places. Now, the problem, of course, is when you have these various locations, do you think some of them kind of sacrifice accuracy and scientific realism in order to make those fees?
Well, I think that, I certainly know that one of the things that Bernard Heuvelmann said is when humans encounter new animals, there's a period in which the animals become fantastic. So in some ways, that actually happens in museums too. When you get somebody through the door and you want them to learn scientifically, scholarly, educationally, you're also going to have to take into account that one of the first questions that they're going to ask is, do bumbles bounce? Or are all snowmen white? Or do you think the Loch Ness Monster eats sheep? Or why couldn't the chupacabras be real and be vampires sucking blood from all the goats in South Florida? So if you're going to understand the general public, and that's where the general public is, you're going to have to be responsive to that in almost an over-exaggerated way. Because museums are not stupid, and they know that they need to be entertaining or people will not keep coming back to learn. And I think we learned that about TV. You know, even the best documentaries on TV are not the ones that are very boring. They have good music, they have good visuals, and all of those things. So, yes, I think there's probably some of the museums are worse than others. For instance, if you go to the two in Loch Ness, one of them is very, very old, cold and drafty. But one of the fascinating things about that is it's built around a very old Victorian-looking theater. So you go into it, and there's all of these old wooden seats in the theater. And then up on the screen, they start showing a 1933 movie of the Loch Ness Monster. It's fascinating. and it couldn't happen at a better kind of location. Then you go across the street, and for about, it seemed like four times as much admission, you're drawn into this place, and it has laser lights, nice charts, and a lot of electronic equipment, and yet you don't get as good a feeling there because they're trying to tell you in that other museum, the one with all of the technology, that we shouldn't really worry about the Loch Ness Monster because that's not the important thing that we want to talk about to you today. We want to talk about the ecology of the lake and how we want to save the fish, and we don't really think the Loch Ness Monster even exists.
Yeah, and they probably have T-shirts that say, I came and saw Loch Ness, and all I got was a bottle of single malt Highland Scotch.
Well, what was funny is that I had along on that expedition my two sons at 7 and 12 and 7 and 11 or something. Anyway, my youngest son, we went through this whole exhibit, really hot, snazzy, $4 million museum. All right, bells and whistles were going off. And we're dumped out into the largest souvenir shop I'd ever seen. And my little son, Caleb, looks up at me and he says, Dad, they just told us we weren't supposed to believe in the Loch Ness Monster and they want us to buy all of these things. And it was
like
from
Oswell.
Yeah, the mouths of kids come the reality and the truth of it. And it was just, it's so true. It was just kind of a contradiction.
Yeah, it's something that we wrestle with here on the Paracast weekly, is the pop culture view of a lot of the subjects that we cover, including cryptozoology. There's people that are serious investigators and researchers that are out there in the trenches, and then there's others trying to capitalize on public perceptions of these subjects.
Right, right. Well, I try to be someplace in between. I'm not really out to capitalize, but I want to help educate people with the museum, and I know that I have
right.
to be, you know, aware that people are going to come in and want to, you know, if it's a certain group of people, they're going to say, where's the Mothman material? Where's the Chupacabra material? And I say, over there in that, well, where's all your Bigfoot toys? And I have a whole cabinet of popular cultural items that have, you know, even the one from $6 Million Man, because people look for those things. And that's their experience of Bigfoot. And then from there, they can branch out and learn more about the Patterson film, more about the Grays Harbor Bigfoot series of tracks that are some of the best tracks in the country, you know, different things like that. But
Grays Harbor, Washington?
Washington State, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Was that the 1918 sighting, that one?
1982, yeah.
Oh, in 82. Okay, because my grandfather 82. Told me about one in 1918 that was quite amazing. It was right there.
Yeah, the Ape Canyon one in 1924 is pretty famous and well-known, where a tribal, seemingly a tribe of Bigfoot, threw rocks at a bunch of miners.
You know, one thing that I've encountered on a number of occasions, having a lifelong interest in the subject of Bigfoot and Sasquatch, and growing up in Washington State, I even might have had an encounter myself, but I've talked about it on the show a number of times, so I won't digress. But one thing that I've heard is that there's supposedly a really super remote valley that's very difficult to get into, right in the heart of British Columbia, where there seems to be an enclave of these hominids. Have you ever encountered a story like that? So there seems to be a centralized location in British Columbia where these things, there's quite a number of them. Have you ever heard anything like that?
You might be talking about the Nahant Valley. The Nahant Valley is also called the Headless Valley, and that has a long, long tradition of some strange stories coming from there, like people finding alligators there, people going into the valley and disappearing, and then their bodies being found against trees without their heads on their bodies, and then a lot of Sasquatch reports from that valley. So I think that sounds like, to me, what you're talking about, a remote valley where people tell, you know, they go there looking for Bigfoot, looking for Sasquatch, and they end up dead. But there, of course, are all of these stories all over the Yukon and British Columbia, of these different places that people say they see Bigfoot, and yet they never can quite find their way back there, and certainly don't have evidence, you know, that they bring out.
One feature that I've heard in a couple of accounts of this particular spot is that at the one entrance into this valley, which is very, as I mentioned, difficult to get into, are two huge full-grown conifers that have been pulled down and then lashed together, almost like in a McDonald's arches kind of motif, as kind of a warning not to go in there. That's one detail that kind of has stuck in my mind over the years. But you know, we've been talking a lot about Sasquatch, and of course we've dovetailed off into the lake creatures. But before we get off the Bigfoot subject, there's been a series of articles that have appeared online here in the last couple of weeks that are attempting to debunk yet again the Patterson-Gimlin footage. And I think the detail that was brought out in these articles, and I think I might have even read it on Cryptomundo, is that the footage of him, of Patterson making the actual plaster cast, one of the tracks supposedly is missing. Do you have any comments on that particular analysis?
Yeah, I think people are talking about reel number two, where Patterson, what Patterson did, he actually, and he admitted this quite early on, it wasn't, I mean, those were the early days, 1967. They found the tracks, but he also wanted to show his whole idea of making the Patterson film, to kind of get a little bit behind it, is that they had decided they were going to try to make a home movie / documentary about going to find Bigfoot. So what they were actually doing that morning, they were out there trying to do B-roll, as we call it in the documentary film business. They were shooting background footage of the trees so that they could say, this is where you go look for Bigfoot.
And I'll tell you what, we got to look for this first. We have Lauren Coleman with Gene and Chris. You're in
America.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Attention GCN listeners, do you have a Patriot on your Christmas list that's nearly impossible to shop for? How would you like the ability to get top-of-the-line, hard-to-find gifts at equally hard-to-beat prices without leaving the comfort of your home? Why fight the crowd? Simply log on to your computer for great gifts and deals for the off-the-grid enthusiast in your family. At offthegridchristmas.com, you'll find great prices on the most popular off-the-grid gifts available today. At offthegridchristmas.com, you'll find unbeatable deals on emergency backup power, herb and vegetable seeds, dehydrated foods, emergency evacuation packs, solar ovens, gun safes, and a host of truly unique stocking stuffers. In these hard times, why not give a gift that really counts, a gift that could truly make a difference? Go to offthegridchristmas.com and our Christmas video highlighting perfect gifts for the off-the-grid fans in your family. Unbeatable gear, unbeatable prices, no more searching. offthegridchristmas.com. That's offthegridchristmas.com.
If you constantly feel run down and tired, your pH level might be low and your body could be full of toxins. If what you drink is not at a pH level of 8 or higher, you are inviting bacteria and acid to thrive in your body. But there is something you can do. Simply add 10 drops of AlkaVision plasma pH drops to your water to help your body rid itself of acidic waste, increase oxygen, and raise your pH balance to optimum levels. AlkaVision plasma pH drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals in the world, alkalizing the water you you drink, ridding your body of acidic waste and toxins, and helping you regain energy and vibrant health. And studies show viruses, bacteria, and toxins cannot survive in an alkaline, high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops at AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com today.
What looks good under your Christmas tree and tastes even better? Big Berkey water filters. Yes, the gift of clean water. A gift that provides a great foundation for achieving good health in the lives of your loved ones. A Big Berkey water filter gives them protection from bacteria, heavy metals, chlorine, fluoride, pesticides and herbicides, VOCs and more. And best of all, a Big Berkey water filter is a gift that lasts for many years with no additional investment. And that saves time and money in filter replacements that other water filters require and are even powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water. As always, all orders over $50 are shipped free, and GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Order online at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com, spelled Big, B-E-R-K-E-Y, WaterFilters.com, or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Gift well this Christmas. Give a Big Berkey water filter.
Hi, this is Ted Phillips, listening to the Paracast, and it's as good as it gets, believe me.
With Gene and Chris and Lauren Coleman, we're looking for Bigfoot, and we're looking for Bigfoot documentaries.
What they did is they went out there and then they accidentally found the Bigfoot, filmed it, and then they went back the next day because they were so scared of this. And they found the tracks. They're plaster, making plaster casts of the tracks. And in the B-row, what Patterson is doing, he creates a footprint himself over to the side and shows in a much more close-up filming how do you pour the plaster into an imprint to make a big footprint. And so that's what a lot of people are getting confused about, is Patterson said, look, I did this as a film. You know, as part of the film, I wanted to show how to make a cast. So I made this footprint. I didn't want to ruin one of the real ones by, you know, if I made a mistake filling it full of this stuff and filming it and doing all of it. So he does this over to the side and people are saying, see, there's no prints there. There's no prints there. And so people are getting confused about the continuity of the film, why he was doing this, for what reason. And, it's, you know, these old films, they're putting lines on them and they're photoshopping them and they're moving things around and it's like the Zapruder film. They're coming up with conspiracies within conspiracies and this is all out of the same people that said Patterson and Gimlin were there and did a massacre of Bigfoot and that they were really shooting up Bigfoot and trying to cover it up. So I'm very suspect of these new debunkers because I think they have other motivations.
Well, where do you come down on the footage itself? Do you feel it's still the best visual evidence that we have, or do you think that there is a possibility of some sort of nefarious, you know, hoax going on?
No, I'm pretty clear, and everything I've written and everything I've said is I'm 95% sure that this is the gold standard for proof. If we, you know, obviously I'm never going to say it's 100% because if you know, I wasn't there and I don't know, but I've interviewed Gimlin many times. I've looked at the film. I've examined some of these theories where even within one book, there was two different possibilities for the guy was writing along in the book and he said, this is definitely a horse hide fur, a red horse hide fur that they made into this Bigfoot, you know, for a costume. And then later on in it, he says, without even knowing that he wrote the other chapter, he says, this is definitely a, you know, Morris gorilla suit from this Carolina guy. And it just totally, we called that book The Tale of Two Suits because he just couldn't get his facts ready. And you know, if you look at the film, and I have the enhanced version of the film in the museum, we can clearly see two independently moving breasts. You can see large hips. You see a mammalian feature of this female turning around and staring down these two guys. These, you know, Gimlin, I mean, he's a big horse wrangler, rough and ready kind of guy. He was scared to death that day. He said, we just didn't know if she was going to tear us from limb to limb. There was no way we're following her into the woods. And we didn't hang around and make, you know, plaster casts of those footprints. We came back the next day and make sure she wasn't around. We were scared to death. And if you look at that film and you think about black bear and how black bear mothers scare away, you know, they leave an area, but as they're leaving, they're giving all kinds of mammalian intimidation behavior, staring the people down and saying, don't follow me. That's exactly what this Bigfoot does.
Yeah, boy, it could be an angry ex-wife of some other Bigfoot. You don't want to mess around with something that's about twice as big as you.
Exactly.
Well, so far, of course, what we see about Bigfoot, it's always pretty distant in terms of understanding how smart they are. So that's a good question here. Compared to humans, where do they stand? What sophistication do they display?
Well, I mean, if you look at them, just baseline, they have no culture. They don't have libraries. They don't have cars. They don't seem to cook their food. They don't have, there's occasional reports of them taking clothes from lines and maybe trying on checkered shirts or, you know, things like that. Or
really?
In the north. Yeah, there's some reports.
Never heard that before. That's an interesting little twist.
Yeah, the same Naha Valley area, that the Bushmen that are reported that you were talking about earlier, they've been reported, because it gets colder and colder up north, to steal people's old boots and wear the boots. You know, actually, Dr. Carlson Kuhn, a famous anthropologist who spoke at a symposium once in British Columbia, once said, you know, if the meek shall inherit the earth, it will be Sasquatch, because he said they're smart enough to not live in cities where there's smog. And so if you look at it from that perspective, all that we do to, you know, take care of ourselves, keep ourselves warm, commerce, communicate, politics, whatever, there's no Herbert Cain among the Bigfoot. There's no, you know, Bill Riley in commentary and all kinds of things like that. So you got a big, big gap there. You basically have a hominoid animal in the woods, occasionally eating, occasionally being seen by humans, and most of the time, you know, mating, having offspring, defecating and eating. Basic animal needs. And there's nothing wrong with any of those, but there's nothing in that takes a conscious intelligence. You have unconscious survival drives that are motivating what we see from Bigfoot. Can I then tell you the IQ of them? Or do I know if they're psychic or have telepathy or any of that? Of course not. We have absolutely no evidence. You have a few reports from a handful of Bigfoot contactees who say that they're standing on the edge of their farmland and they're taking in the thoughts of a Bigfoot. Now, I have no evidence that that's not some kind of pre-psychotic behavior, or if the person is actually listening to Bigfoot. There's no measurable evidence that these creatures are talking to humans telepathically or with some kind of Indian language or any of that. So, a lot of people come in here and they think I'm a true believer. I never use the word believer. I'm open-minded, but I'm skeptical all the time.
Yeah, count me among that that crowd, too. I never use the B word or the P word, the prophecy word, prophesize, or believe. I don't believe any of this stuff, but, boy, it sure is interesting.
And I think that a lot of the skeptics, debunkers, are just as bad as the true believers. The people that I feel most uncomfortable with in a room is that two ends of the continuum, the true believers and the debunkers, because the debunkers come into all of these investigations completely closed-minded to any of the possibilities that these species, these creatures, could actually exist.
Well, let's, since we're on the subject, we do have some questions from our forum.
Sure, that'd be great.
To fire at you. And, you know, you have answered a couple of these, but Zylo wants to know, historically, the majority of Bigfoot or Sasquatch sightings have been from the Northwest region of North America. to what do you attribute the widespread sightings and reports that we've seen in modern times? That's one question that he has. The second question is, in cases of Bigfoot DNA evidence, when the evidence returns as unknown primate, have any researchers correlated the DNA profiles of these unknowns?
Okay, the first question. Well, you have a lot of the copycat effect and the cultural, you know, osmosis. When you have such a high interest in Bigfoot, you're going to get all kinds of people saying they saw Bigfoot. I think that 80% of the sightings are misidentification. Large bear, the back end of a moose, your grandmother in a fur coat. I mean, I don't know.
You got to talk about those grandmothers in fur coats that are mistaken for Bigfoot. Are we serious here, Lauren?
I've heard lots of possible explanations, but boy, Lauren, that's a new one on me.
Oh, really? Oh, I've actually seen YouTube footage of a plane flying over a field, and it looks, upon closer examination, like somebody's grandfather or grandmother in a fur coat walking along the edge of a field with a walking stick, and somebody posted that on YouTube as saying, this is my Bigfoot film. And it happens more than you think. That's you know, it really does. Anyway, so where was I? So you've got all of these situations. The one thing that I think we're kind of becoming more aware of is that if you remember living in the 50s and the 60s, every day you would pick up your newspaper and there'd be UFO sightings. They'd run them in the papers. And you just don't get that many anymore. What do you get? You do in the 80s and the 70s, you started getting people doing UFO then into Bigfoot, and so you get some of those sightings. You don't even have those sightings in the paper anymore.
I guess it isn't weird enough. You want something that involves a politician, because that's the weirdest thing of all sometimes. We have Lauren Coleman, who's definitely not weird, with Gene and Chris, who definitely are weird. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.